Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cried the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance.
freaky darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Sterling, Getty, Kerouac, or Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Join Pam on Friday for a break on through. Sit in with Afasiana and Babla as they teach you the fine art of becoming part sinner, part saint on Saturday. And every other Sunday, join Arcana and Luyu as they go delving deep into the darkness. These shows are designed so you can color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, and my co-host Pam Ray and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Evening, Pam.
Good evening, Rex. So, what's up?
Not a whole lot.
Same old, huh?
Yeah.
I get that. Well, I went to the library today, and they were having a book sale, so I got two books, because I don't have a lot of extra money, but I got two books for a dollar each, and one on the rise and fall of the railroad that crossed an ocean, and another one for my daughter about stories told from the point of view of a traveling cat. Obviously, that one was fiction to a certain point, but still. And I have decided I am going to start renting from the library movies that I have known about but never actually taken the opportunity to read. So right now I'm watching Citizen Kane. Well, obviously not at this moment because we have a show, but that's what I was watching earlier and still have yet to finish.
What was the name of the sled?
The what?
What was the name of the sled?
I didn't know there was going to be a freaking quiz. I have no idea. My hearing isn't that good, and I wasn't looking at the screen. So what was the name of the screen?
Rosebud.
Well, now you freaking ruined the movie for me.
You asked.
Well, if you knew that was going to be the answer to who was Rosebud, why wouldn't you say, I can't tell you, Pam, it would ruin the movie?
It was also the nickname of Robbie Petrie on the Dick Van Dyke Show back in the 60s.
And was their, it? Oh.
Their thought was, well, they had plenty of uncles, so they couldn't pick one to actually pick a middle name for Robbie. So they took all the uncles' names. I think it was Robert, Oscar, Bertram, Edward, Ulysses, and David.
Oh, funny.
Well, Robert, Oscar, Samuel, Edward, Bertram, Ulysses, and David.
Well, that is an interesting little tidbit. Very cool. Well, you've got a great lineup of poetry tonight. Wonderful prompts that you put up, and oh goodness, that was Randy. I was going to bring him on, but he's having a lot of static, and Randy, I don't know if you need to adjust something, but you got a lot of static going on there. But, yeah, I was going to go ahead and let's see if I can bring Randy on and see if the static has improved.
Hello.
Hey, Randy, welcome to the show. Glad you could join us.
Well, I'm glad to be here. And I was sitting here quietly trying to yell spoiler alert, but it's too late.
Yeah, Randy, I am really sorry. I don't know if you have storms going on in your area or what, but you might want to try to hang up and call back because we cannot hear anything you're saying. It is pure static. All right. Well, hopefully Randy will call back and things will be fixed. I don't know what weather's going on in his area, while we're waiting to for him to call back, are you still there, Rex?
No.
Oh, you're just on a roll for being a pain in the Batuski tonight, aren't you?
It is Starter and Sapphire, so huh.
I think there's a very fine line between satire and being a smartass and ruining a movie for somebody. There. All right. Welcome back, Randy. Glad you could join us.
Hello, Pam and Rex.
Oh, that's
and,
much better.
Can you hear me okay now?
Oh, hell
yes,
yeah.
Yes, you can. Much better.
All right. That's good. I was trying to explain before that before I came on, I was sitting here yelling and saying, spoiler alert, please. But Rex went ahead and blurted it right out.
I know. Spoiling a movie for me. And here I thought it was something that I was supposed to have heard at the beginning of the movie or something like that. And he's just like, yep, going to spoil it for you. I am never
I did like his transition, though, into trying to change the area of the conversation into a Dick Van Dyke Show. I thought that was a kind of a clever segue there.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah, every time Rex does that, I just grin and shake my head and think, you are a clever little shit, aren't you? That's one of the things that... Rex, you are so lucky that I like you so much.
Well, shame on you for not seeing the movie, but actually that was the reason I brought up the sled, because of the extra added people.
Twist it and turn it all you like, Rex. It all boils down to the fact
that you actually knew that you were going to tell me you were watching Citizen Kane, which I didn't.
Well, anyways, so tell us a little bit, since we're twisting and turning and trying to avoid the topic of you ruining a movie for me, tell us a little bit about Sartre.
I just thought the name and just went digging into his quotes. There was a ton of them. I picked out the ones that were kind of funky, like that. What did we do? There were a few that were actually really oddball, to say the least. Like 3 o'clock is always too late or too early for anything you want to do. Yeah. And I hate victims who respect their executions. I like that one. And words are loaded pistols. So some oddball thoughts. I say murder is abstract. You pull the trigger, and after that, you do not understand anything that happens. Unfortunately, that's not quite true. And I thought this one was pretty funny, as well as ironic. Only the guy who isn't rowing has time to rock the boat. Kind of note to laziness.
Very cool. And I will say, you know what? We didn't get a whole lot of right, but that's okay because what we did get was quality. You know, we got, and it really has been, I mean, it's not just your contest. It's not just this show. It's been a little bit slow on all poetry recently. You know, but what we did get has been quality, and plus we grabbed a few extras from people off of the blanketed permission list from another contest that was on topic. And so, you know, I'm really looking forward to the delving into tonight's poetry. And so let's go ahead, if you're ready, and get the ball rolling.
Yep.
All right. And Randy, I'm going to go ahead and put your poem up and go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay, I'm going to have to refresh here because I don't see it. Yes, my poem was taken from prompt number 8, the one you had mentioned, only the guy who isn't rowing has time to rock the boat. Excuse me. Idle minds. I've noticed idle minds will often harbor discontent, which then boils over and looks for a place to vent its acrimony upon the nearest unsuspecting soul, unfortunate enough to be close to a babbling troll, always willing to unleash their pent-up frustrations with no regard for who may hear these declarations. After all, they see their thoughts as intelligently valid, unlike most common folks' regurgitated word salad. Then they complain. No one will ever really listen to their masterful plans or side with their position. Meanwhile, those within earshot have grown weary of their ramblings and their undeveloped theories. Still, those idle minds endlessly continue to create nothing substantial about which we can debate. They'll drone on, trying to keep their theories afloat. Without an oar, all they manage is to rock the boat. End poem.
Great read, Randy. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what do you got?
All right. I like this one. Great rhyme and flow, wonderful imagery. Love the attitude from it. I feel like Randy has really nailed the prompt and nailed the kind of tone that I would expect in this contest. You know, really biting lines, you know, taking a snap at those who have nothing to express but shallow complaints. You know, I mean, these are basically people who blow wind out of both ends, always willing to unleash their pent-up frustrations with no regard for who may hear these declarations. After all, they see their thoughts as intelligently valid, unlike most common folks' regurgitated word salad. Love the use of the phrase word salad. And I really like also, I mean, this is great all the way through, but another part I really like was still those idle minds endlessly continue to create nothing substantial about which we can debate. They'll drone on trying to keep their theories afloat without an oar, all they manage is to rock the boat. And I like how you bring the quote in the end, but paraphrase it in your own words. And you know, basically, you know, what I see here is the idea of people who are so desperate to appear intelligent that they'll just throw whatever garbage that they can out there and claim, you know, they are the all-know-it of the topic, you know, of their choice. This is just in a great write all the way through and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Nice. Well, you hit on that idea of intelligence. Well, intelligence does not note intelligentsia, just as intelligentsia does not note intelligence. I like you hit this off with what roils within the ether sphere. I like that note in the its acrimony upon the nearest unsuspecting soul, unfortunate enough to be close to a babbling troll. Those idle minds who kind of sit there, they've got nothing better to do than troll anyone and everyone they can to get under their skin. I like that. And again, that regurgitated word salad, I enjoy that too. I call it verbal flatulence and oral diarrhea. It means absolutely nothing. And
yes.
Then those thoughts, those back then, they complain. the idea that it doesn't just fall to the trolls either. A lot of politicians fall into that main role because people aren't listening to them, so they regurgitate the same old shite, which, again, means absolutely nothing, or has been proven to be false in its own oratory. And yet they still keep rolling out those same old lies that seem to, it bleeds down to a few people, yet most understand and know that it is just that, pure shite. And they still don't get why nobody really wants to hear their drivel anymore. And what else we got here? Here we go. Nothing substantial about which we can debate. Again, there's a lot of truth in that. They'll drone on trying to keep their theories afloat. Without an oar, all they manage to do is rock the boat. And true, deliberate idea. It is those trolls, they're simply there to create havoc and rend everything into hysteria. So you've got one side fighting another, and before you know it, there's 10 different groups howling at each other for blood. Meaning, unmeaningful diatribe spurted for no other good reason, because they can hide behind the privacy of a wall and a name and a picture, which means absolutely zero. I like that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, the internet's full.
Oh, hell yes. I got a kick out of listening to some of them because, damn, they do really speak out of their asses through their mouths, because a whole lot of it makes any sense. And some of it is just deliberate nonsense just to get the other side sparked into fury.
Yep. Talking for the sake of talking and hoping to strike a nerve somewhere.
Which they often do.
Yep.
All right, Pam, what we got next?
All right. Up next, we have Goodnight, Stranger by Ben Hart. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read for us, please.
Goodnight, Stranger by Ben Hart. Hello, baby. I see you dancing up the walls, blowing indigo smoke, blowing bubblegum roses, primrose overgrowth on lips morose. Pass the moment before it goes. Before it kills us, take us away with the snowfall. Show me love, or at least a good time. Sing me good night. Return me to the friends I came with, singing good night, stranger. Don't come here again, or you won't know as who you'll wake next. Hello, baby. Hello, baby. Hello, baby. Is this death? Or but the no man's land where life meets time? I suppose I don't need to know as long as you are mine. Goodbye, siren. Decreed. How cruel of me to take what you wish to leave between eyes and cast it back as something more than either of us could ever weather. How cruel of me to call myself your savior, then forgive me for the transgressions that I wish had befell me in blindness. But we both know, I think too, for that, especially about you. I don't know if there exists a forgiveness for that, but I will apply myself to be better. Collapse. Sometimes it feels like my head will break. Life will end like a TV shutting down upon even the slightest change of thought. I suppose the blood wants to run in perfect circles. Look up. Whatever you are doing, look up and be lifted through retreat into self. Be lifted. And poem. And let me see. Ben took a number of prompts. 2, 7, 9, and 10. What did he take as a toto? He took, I hate victims who respect their elders. And if you are lonely when you're alone, you are in bad company. Life begins on the other side of despair. And like all dreamers, I mistook disenchantment for truth. And Randy, why don't we start with you? What do you think?
Well, you know, there's a lot to this poem that really, excuse me, it really goes on. And like you said, it covered 4 prompts, so it kind of goes from one thing to another, but he has them numbered. So, the beginning, I see you dancing up the walls, blowing indigo smoke, blowing bubblegum roses, primrose overgrowth, on lips morose, past the moment before it goes, before it kills us, takes us away with the snowfall. And it moves on to, this is death, or but the no man's land where life meets time. I suppose I don't need to know as long as you are mine. Good night, siren. To me, it doesn't have a real cohesive flow to it, and I guess that's because it's different prompts. But it has a lot of interesting lines like those. And how cruel of me to take what you wished to leave between eyes and cast it back as something more and neither of us could ever weather. How cruel of me to call myself your savior, then forgive me for the transgressions that I wish had befell me in blindness. But we both know, especially about you, it was hard for me to take it all in and really gain a comprehensive understanding of the whole thing, but it was interesting, and I enjoyed your read of it. I think it was an interesting concept by Ben.
Excellent. Thank you, Randy. All right, Pam.
All right. Yep, Ben definitely offers up much food for thought. That is for sure. I like how he's called part one "Hello, Baby." That makes me think of the movie where what is it called? Oh, Spaceballs. It makes me think of the movie Spaceballs, where the alien comes out of the guy's stomach and starts singing, "Hello, my baby, hello, my darling." I don't know why, but it just does. I really like how the message to me anyways, and how I interpret the main message was that it's a really great write on the cruel games of love that tamper with the heart and screw with the mind. How cruel of me to take what you wish to leave between eyes and cast it back as someone more than either of us could ever weather. How cruel of me to call myself your savior, then forgive me for the transgressions that I wish had befallen me in blindness. But we both know I think it too for that, especially about you. I feel like that part speaks on the idea of the not the same feelings going both ways. It is definitely a thought-provoking and intriguing write. I like how he titles that last small part "Hope," that no matter what else we go through, no matter how cruel people are to us or how cruel we may be at times to others, there is always that hope. Look up whatever you are doing. Look up and be lifted. So through retreat into self, be lifted. And that hope is not found, because it says retreat into self, the idea of that hope being found within yourself. So wonderful write and very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam. I'm going to take a guess. You look at the picture. There's something that comes out of that picture which rolls into this too. Because if you look, you got the street lamp there, but you've got the backdrop of the moon, so it gets elongated. And you also look at the woman dressed in green, but she's got a halo over her head. So there's some inference that walks in there. Plus, you're looking at a background of wooded trees. So the idea of that first stanza kind of hit me with a double angle, because you hit that "Hello, Baby" as that noted song. I thought of Big Bopper. "Hello, baby, Chantilly lace, pretty face," so to speak. Anyway, this thought, he offers up that woman not just as the goodnight stranger, but maybe even a night walker, so to speak, hits on the, what was it, Show Me Love or At Least a Good Time, Sing Me Goodnight, Return Me to the Friends That I Came With, singing Goodnight Stranger, Don't Come Here Again, as though it's a one-off transactional note. The idea, hello baby, and then is this death or but the no man's land where life needs time? I suppose I don't need to know as long as you are mine. The idea of maybe the evening itself. What else we got in here? I don't know if there exists a forgiveness for that, but I will apply myself to be better. Looking within oneself, some introspection. And he does offer up that again in the last vignette. Look up. Whatever you are doing, look up and be lifted through retreat into self. Be lifted. That note to, again, self-reflection. But also, we look at the picture, the idea of looking up is maybe a touch note to heavenward, or at least into the light past the darkness, because you got the street lamp and you got the moon. So the reflection is maybe the reflection of self as one goes hunting for that which they don't have yet. Find something in between within the darkness and the shadows that calls forth the need to reflect on themselves per se, because that note to is this death? Could that be the note to the end of life in that moment, because you trod where you shouldn't have gone to begin with, and that could be a dangerous place to walk into. Anyway, I liked it, and the pic is gorgeous.
Wow, thank you, Rex.
Well, you didn't paint the picture, did you?
No, but this is satire night, remember that. You can be a smartass and claim it because satire night. I can be a smartass and claim it because it's satire night.
Well, he does call the picture Blue Hell, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it is done by him.
All his artwork. You know what? Every single freaking picture he attaches to a poem is his. It doesn't matter what artist you're presenting, it's always his. So that's not news there, Rex.
Who's shitting your oatmeal this morning?
Okay, well, you know what? Never mind. First you ruin a movie for me, then I make a perfectly good and intelligent comment, and you say, "Wow, thank you, Pam." It's not even like I made like an awful comment, and you have to go into your "Wow, thank you, Pam" routine.
Okay. I apologize. Wasn't done on purpose.
I'm sorry. I'll try to, all right, well, I'll just clean up my oatmeal and we'll move along. And with that being said, we have forgiveness. Oh, that's a good title. By T. Perry 898. Let me check the rope has substance for I hate to see those, let me start over again, sorry. Forgiveness by T. Perry 898. Let me check the rope has substance, for I hate to see loose threads, but my answer in the bucket, put my answer in the bucket, I shall read it when I'm dead. Sweet forgiveness is a virtue, Madam Guillotine a must. I shall put my life in your hands, for you're someone I can trust. My ignoble executioner, I will bear you no remorse. We both formed a fleeting friendship as my sentence ran its course. Please take aim, my handsome fellow, make it swift and make it true. A reprieve would just be dandy, but it's pending a review. Should you have a tiny puppy, choose to name it Mr. Jones. I bequeath to you my namesake plus a bucket full of bones. Let the baying mob bear witness, I shall bless you not with hate, but will wait for you in heaven on the lawn of God's estate. And poem.
Great reprint. And T. Perry took, I hate it when victims forgive their executioners. And Randy, what do you think?
Randy had to go.
T took this to the edge in the note, because this kind of walks back in time to when, because he does offer up Madame Guillotine in this as that note to those who went before the blade. They offered up a note. Give me a clean cut, whether it be by the guillotine itself or the executioner's axe. They would pull up their hair, say, give me a clean cut, and often pay the executioner to make sure the blade was sharp enough to make sure it went through the first time, so there wasn't a double note to aggravation and mess on their part. Kind of hits of that notion. Well, yeah, if you want it done right, you better make sure it is sharp and ready to go. And it's awesome. This does, at the back end of this, it hits that note of, but we'll wait for you in heaven on the lawn of God's estate, offering up that note of kind of turning the other cheek and say, hey, I'll see you on the other side. It's not your fault you're doing this, even though, hey, it's what you do for a living. So there's a nice run of sardonic flavor that rolls through this as well. I like it, because he does it start off with, let me check the rope. Let me check the rope has substance, for I hate to see those loose threads. Put my answer in the bucket. A double note kind of hit that sort of, everybody has their bucket list, so to speak. Well, the bucket list on this aspect was usually for the head or the basket in this case. So I like the little tone of dark humor that rolls through this as well. What about you, since you read it, Anne?
I liked this one, too, and I have to agree with you that the sardonic definitely comes through with this one. Great rhyme and flow. I like the reference to Madame Guillotine, and I like that you brought up that tidbit, and I had seen that before in when I watched videos on YouTube about the history of executioners. And it's interesting because, you know, they're such an important part of any community, and yet they were treated as outcasts. And basically, if you were an executioner, you usually had only a limited amount of people you could marry. Your children oftentimes became executioners, married into other executioner families. Very much could pay off, as you were saying, to get that blade a little sharper to make sure that they didn't make any mistakes. And I thought this was a great take on the chosen prompt. And I like how it speaks on the idea of bending over backwards to make friends with your executioner. It kind of actually makes me think of the, is it Frank Zappa, I believe? I may be misquoting, but I think it was Frank Zappa who said there's a difference between bending backwards and bending over. I'll have to look that one up, but it does remind me of that quote there. And the whole idea of, you know, when you're bending over and for the executioner, well, the only one who gets paid for that is the executioner, not yourself. I do like I really like this all the way through, but especially that end stanza. Should you have a tiny puppy, choose to name it Mr. Jones, I bequeath to you my namesake, plus a bucket full of bones. great write by T. Perry, and very well done.
Absolutely. What you look at it. I fed your ass. Go lie down.
Somebody wants attention.
It's 1 o'clock in the morning, so I'll lie down. All right, what do we got next?
All right, well, up next we have Families Fallen from Fallacies by Jenny the Deep. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read.
Families Fallen from Fallacies by Jenny the Deep. Ghouly grudges growl, honesty humbly howls, euthanizing evil executioners explicitly, that covered up calculated crimes cleverly. Families from false fallacies finally fall feverishly, rehashing renounced rebuttals relentlessly, bewildered, beaten brains badly battered, dreams destroyed, detonating dreary dampers. Scorned soulmates soon slowly stray, living loveless lives, loneliness laminates, caucuses cascading, clogging clarity, dire darkness deeply delves, depleting desired deeds. Lesson learned, trying lessons, lessons learned, lying lessons life, Satan scorches sinless scandalous smiles, making murderous melodies, melting mighty martyrs, hysterically, hell's hoarding, heathens harder. End poem. Jenny bit into a number of quotes. She hit on the idea of hate victims who respect their executioners, words are loaded pistols, evil is the product of humans to make abstract that which is concrete. If you are lonely when you're alone, you are in bad company. And like all dreamers, I mistook disenchantment for truth. All right, Pam, what do you think?
Well, first of all, a great read there with all that alliteration, which she definitely does whip up quite a bit of it. She definitely, like Ben, she likes to dig into multiple prompts. I like how this speaks to me on the darkness that takes over home and heart, especially when lying and manipulation becomes involved. Let's see, I have to say, some of the parts that really stood out to me was this: bewildered, beaten brains, badly battered, dreams destroyed, detonating dreary dampers, scorned soulmates soon slowly stray, living loveless lives, loneliness laminates. I like how that speaks on the whole mental manipulation and abuse and just the way words kind of pull people apart from each other and basically breaks apart what was once strong. Another part I really liked was making murderous melodies, melting mighty martyrs. I felt like melting mighty martyrs was the whole idea of somebody playing the martyr, but when it's no longer put up with, that facade melts away. I could be wrong in that, but that's what I got from it. So excellent write and very well done.
Nice. Thank you. The language is explicit within this. It kind of hits on the idea, which she wrote, families fallen from fallacies, the idea of a largesse. We're not just talking the small unit itself. We're talking a larger unit. So talking about the entirety of the family. Ghouly grudges growl, honesty humbly howls. And you hit on the euthanizing evil executioners explicitly, that covered up calculated crimes cleverly. The idea of you can still have, you've got a family that might roll with the idea of criminality, yet you've got one or two within that are kind of on the outside, because it's on that third stanza. Scorned soulmates soon slowly stray. Soulmates, loved ones, Living Loveless Lives, Loneliness Laminate. Again, but that note to those who've borne the weight of this now have to live those loveless lives because they're tainted forever because of the stench of that which the family exacted out upon everybody and eventually them as well. Let's see what else I got. Lessons learned, lying lessons, life. Satan scorches sinners, scandalous smiles. Again, that note to, hey, if you can't do the time, don't bother doing the crime. And on the other side, everybody gets their noted weight to where you end up because of that which you have rendered upon everyone else. So the idea on the back end of this, hey, you might have thought yourself a martyr, but you might just end up being the noted heavyweight being despoiled in hell. I like that thought. Nicely done, Jenny. What we got next?
All right. Let's see here. Up next, we have Be Careful What You Wish. Oh, sorry. I don't know why I thought it was called that. Oh, yeah. The Magicians. Be Careful What You Wish For by The Poet. And we have a recording for that. So here we go.
The Magicians, be careful what you wish for. I got you an assistant. What? Said Death. Nice. Thank you. What is he like? Nice, forgiving, friendly, and a good hard worker. A friend of ours, said Death. Sounds good. Who are they? Asked Lance. Hello, boss, said Brian, smiling. Lance looked shocked. No, 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 not him. Lance said, yes, he's a great guy, for a ghost. Said Death. I killed him, said Lance. It's all right, you're nice. You didn't want to do it, said Brian. Maybe, but I hate victims that respect their executioners, Lance said. I knew you were cold-hearted. You don't have blood, you have ice in your veins, said Death bitterly. Must be your killer's heart, bad as he pretends he is, Brian said, seeing through Lance's coldness. It irritated Lance. Death noticed he laughed. He's your perfect assistant, said Death, knowing a good assistant for him would see through his braggadocio. Lance liked to play with people's minds. Couldn't play with Brian's mind. He never could, which was why his father chose him. Not him, not ever, said Lance. He could hardly speak. He was so angry and embarrassed. He's your assistant, that's final, said Death, putting his foot down. With that, the father left.
Great read, poet. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It's much appreciated. All right, Pam, what do you think?
All right. Well, I think Rachel, the poet, has a wonderful talent for storytelling. Whenever I read her stories, whether it's part or, you know, one of her longer pieces, she always has great use of dialogue between the characters. She really carves out all the characters quite nicely, giving them individual personalities. I like the dark humor in this. I like the character creation. I have to say how I like how she fits in the quote, maybe, but I hate victims who respect their executioners. Lance said. I knew you were cold-hearted. You don't have blood. You have ice in your veins, said Death bitterly. Must be your killer's heart. And I like the irony that she puts in that, and the whole idea of Death calling somebody cold. Because, you know, you always think of that Death himself as cold, but really Death, the personification is the whole idea of Death is something that's natural. Whereas as someone who kills just for the fun of it, that becomes the unnatural, the cold-hearted. So wonderful storytelling and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Mel, notice this. There's a little touch of Shakespeare in this, just for the irony, Leighton, and the fact that Lance killed Brian, but it was for pettiness, because Lance liked getting in people's minds, but he couldn't get into Brian's. So the idea of Death offering up Brian as his assistant, putting his foot down and saying, he is your assistant, and that's the end of it. And that final note to Lance, you don't have a choice, so to speak. Otherwise, you might be the next one joining Lance on the other side. I think the idea with that is taking Brian as the second half of Lance himself, that note to a balancing act, one who can sit and tell Lance the truth that he does not want to hear, because there's something more to Brian than there is to Lance, and Lance needs the idea of that balance. That's what Death is offering up. You either get the balance or you get Death, so to speak. And I don't know if that's her exact idea going forward, but that kind of hits me with the note of, hey, you know what? It's this or nothing, and the nothing for you is eternity on the other side. So take it. I like that. Something different. Thank you, Poet. All right, Pam, what you got next?
All right. Let's see here. I have noticed that the Poet has quite a bit of books on her page that she has published. You know, if people ever wander over to her page, they can go ahead and check those out. So with that being said, we have Sticks and Stones May Break My Bones, But Words Will Break My Mind by Darkened Wars. They say sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me. That isn't true. They surely do. You don't know how harsh words can be. Your words may not harm my body, but they can wound my mind. Your empty words, my loaded pistol that leave a scar behind. Mean things you just say in passing can stick with me for years, and you will never even know how what you said brought me to tears. It's nailed into my brain now. Those words echo in my sleep. I'm haunted by the madness what you let go of others keep. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And Christina did take number three, Words All Loaded Pistols. So I did like the title. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will break my mind. Offering up a twisted note to sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Was that it? Damn, I can't even remember that one. But that's okay. The idea, though, it does work. Sometimes those words that are offered up are meant for the idea of sticking points, because they come from those Harvard angles that one keeps and uses for their totality, because they know they will stick at some point, and they're meant to hurt. And there's truth in that, and it works easily, because it's how people get under the skin of other people, and it's designed to make them, especially when it comes to discussions, arguments, or whatever else, the sticking point to ending a conversation is that jibe which sticks and shuts the mouth of the other person to the voice. You did that on purpose. Yeah, well, it just ended everything else at that point. And then it does hit on that note of designed for that totality of reaping the benefit in the moment, which is pain. And the easy walk away after that, as she puts it in the last, what you let go of, others keep. The idea of, hey, you did it on purpose, and you knew you were going there and then going away. So, I think that, Christina. Thank you. All right, Pam, what about you?
Let me take myself off mute. There we go. I like what you had to say there, Rex. This is a great rhyming poem, as always, by Christina. I really appreciate it. And it's got a strong and important message that I think many of us can relate. The way that words can hurt and permanently scar a person's spirit. And it's not the easiest pain or scars to explain to people because they don't see it. It's not like a physical scar or you got a cut, you can show it to people. It's kind of those scars that you carry inside yourself. And I really like this all the way through, but especially when she says, mean things you just say in passing can stick with me for years, and you will never even know what you said brought me to tears. Of course, I think part of that is, I was going to say communication is important, but on the other hand, usually, most of the time, people who are cruel with their, well, I think there's two kinds. There's those who might seem like they're cruel with their words, but really they just don't understand what does and doesn't trigger you. And then there are those who are emotionally and psychologically abusive, which I feel is the kind she's talking about in this poem. And those kind of people that you need to step away from in order to heal. Wonderful, right? And very well done.
All right. Where do we go next?
All right. Well, that is the $20 question. Let's find out. Let's see. I read the last one. So let's go ahead and, here we go. We'll put up one with a SoundCloud, and then we'll have you read after that. So, up next, we have Despair by Weaver of Dreams, and she was nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud. So here we go.
Life begins on the other side of deepest despair, where the weight of existence becomes a snare. In the abyss where darkness reigns unchecked, the soul's yearning for meaning we oft deflect. In this realm where anguish and torment reside, beneath the surface is where hope will hide. We find the fertile soul for liberation's seed, waiting to be toiled, the harvest to be freed. In the depths of despair, we face our truth, the existential questions demanding proof. Here in despondence, a place well known, shattered illusions are fiercely overthrown. Beckons with whispers of transformation, giving birth to a new profound revelation. It is here that we garner our inner might, challenge the darkness, reclaim our light. Confront the abyss with an unwavering gaze. Transcend the boundaries that limit our ways. Life's true essence lies beyond despair's door, where authenticity thrives and our spirits soar. Where all the broken pieces of our being mend. In the freedom of choice, our true selves ascend.
Great read, Kate. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Who Took Life begins on the other side of despair. And that was the point also. All right, Pam, what do you got?
All right. Well, you know what? I really liked this one with beautifully written rhyming couplets, wonderful imagery. As always, Kate does a fabulous job with her SoundCloud. And I like how the main message of this one is facing our own darkness in order to ascend to the light. You know, the idea that we have to release what's inside of us and become free of that darkness. I really like, in this realm where anguish and torment reside, beneath the surface is where hope will hide. We find the fertile soil for liberation seed, waiting to be tilled, the harvest to be freed. In the depths of despair, we face our truth, the existential questions demanding proof. You know, I like how the how this speaks on looking for answers inside, for looking for answers inside ourselves, looking for hope. You know, even if it's like that, how the parable of the mustard seed, that tiny grain of hope, if we tend to it, it will spring to life. It will offer up a sense of renewal to ourselves. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Well, she does start, uses the chord up front, life begins on the other side, but drops in the deepest for the despair. So that angle of kind of a, almost a note to wallowing in the depths of that note, because she does hit on the abyss. And you look deeply into the abyss stares back at you and swallows you whole. She hits on that, where darkness reigns unchecked, the soul's yearning for meaning we all deflect. And then again, in this realm where anguish and torment reside, beneath the surface is where hope will hide. But you spent such a large amount of time roiled in deep despair, you don't realize that the idea of hope is just beneath the surface itself, just or to go to scratch away the eggplant of misery, and to see that there is something there. But even in that, you hit on that, in the depths of despair we face our truth, the existential question demanding proof, the questioning of self, even self-reflection in that moment. All you can do is plant the seed. In the idea of transformation, hits on that idea and that note, in order to roil out of despair itself, you have to give up that essence of life. In other words, you have to let that die in order to be reborn on the other side, which is a note to the transformation itself, the thought of the phoenix. You let that get burned so the new can actually reveal itself, reclaim the light, as she puts it. And then confront the abyss with an unwavering gaze, transcend the boundaries that limit our ways. Yeah. If you tend to live there and linger and then look at it for what it is, as opposed to look at it for what you are looking into it, then the idea is you'll end up staying there. So you have to break that cycle within yourself to then reemerge on the other side. So nicely done, Kate. Thank you very much. All right.
I was going to say, I like what you had to say about breaking the cycle. I think that was a great observation. And up next, we have Free Radicals by Eric Svensson. And go ahead, please, Rex, and give that a read.
Free Radicals by Eric Svensson. Ballistic missile tongues stashed in silo mounts, resplendent, replete, and ready, free radicals. Reboot, refire, refute, blessed are the mute, free radicals. Nowhere to hide, mudslide versus landslide, free radicals. On point, on the spot, perfect arabesque, free radicals. Dark between dusk and dawn, light between dawn and dusk, free radicals. Heaven or hell, ballistic missile tongues stashed in silo mouths, free radicals. Ballistic endgame tongue stashed in a blame game mouth versus blame game tongue stashed in endgame mouth. Free radical, place your bets. Free will finally reels in its creators. Duality dances its final curtain call. Millennia of minor falls usurped by responsibility's long awaited major lift. And oh. All right, what do you think?
I like this one. I like this one. Did you want to read his little note that he wrote about Sartre?
Yeah, he did. He did offer up star notes to a star to the free radicals angle, and he does give a note to what he meant by that. One of Sartre's most controversial contributions to philosophy is his claim that we are radically free to define our essence, but also free to choose, act, and even change our emotions. Of course, radical freedom is not exactly a pleasant experience. Realizing we are free to choose means that we are entirely responsible for our lives, which creates angst, a feeling of anxiety, or even despair. Nevertheless, denying our radical freedom is what Sartre referred to as bad faith. Accordingly, we act in bad faith anytime we refuse to take responsibility for our actions, beliefs, or emotions. He likened it to a kind of self-delusion. And Eric took the prompt, words are loaded pistols. All right.
Well, I'm glad you added, you read that little footnote, but I thought this had brilliant imagery and metaphors, clever word play. I really liked his reference to free radicals. I like where he says, reboot, refire, refute, blessed are the mute. I really like blessed are the mute because it seems to me that the only way we can possibly never say the wrong thing is to never say anything at all, which, of course, you know, being human and, you know, with the need to have conversation, that's going to happen. I do like that picture. I can't help but wonder if that's actually a rose in his garden. If it isn't, it's definitely beautiful either way. But end point on the spot, perfect arabesque, dark between dusk and dawn, light between dawn and dusk. I feel like this speaks on the way that we're constantly juggling that fine line between our thoughts and our words and our words and our actions. It's a wonderful, intelligent right on the constant manipulation of freedom within the human mind. So wonderful right and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. I do believe that's a peace rose. They're beautiful, wow. Kind of looks like it.
Oh, pretty.
And this kind of walks along the same line that Randy did earlier. Ballistic missile tones stashed in silo mounds. The idea of rocketry is a sort of easily fired up and ready to spill their supposed edification, because he does hit on that note, next line, resplendent, repeat, replete, and ready, free radical, yes. The thought with reboot, refire, refute, blessed are the mute. Again, those that are smart enough in the moment to keep their mouths closed, but also smart enough to know when they should speak. And then again, hits with the next sentence, nowhere to hide, mudslide versus landslide. So how far do you take it? You want to dabble in the mudslide at the moment or the full-on landslide that does come? And so then he hits on with on point, on the spot, perfect arabesque. Again, that note to the hitting the challenge and hitting it properly without the thought of the, as he puts it, ballisticism from stashed in silo mouths. So you fight back with intelligence and knowledge on whatever's being tossed your way.
Then he gets again, Heaven or Hell, Ballistic Missing Tongue, Stashed in Silo Mount, your choice. Again, that note to your responsibility, which he dropped into the back end of this. And then he gets on Ballistic Endgame Tongue, Stashed in Blame Game Mouth, versus Blame Game Tongue, Stashed in Endgame Mouth. So the idea of the argument being put back is that which takes out the gusto of the end game tongue stashed in the blame game mouth. You got to have the cookies to stand up to that which you're being rushed into, and to make them own their own words by owning your own in turn. So nicely done, Eric. Thank you. All right.
All right. Well, up next we have A Word or Two by Truth Chills. And it goes like this. Who needs enemies when I got me? Integrity is about accountability. Two words that are obsolete as Hostess Twinkies. The problem is one that can never be remedied, because everywhere I go, I'm right there with me. I'm stuck in a time warp where it always seems to be 3 o'clock, too late to say sorry, but just in time for a pity party. Waste of time bargaining with death when it's my time to go. I'll gladly give back what was given, but everything I got from the struggle, I leave to my sons and daughters. All the knowledge and wisdom I acquired from being born on the other side of despair, I leave as a manual so you can overcome common sense and save yourself the trouble of repeating the same shit over and over. One more thing, if it ain't broke, don't try and fix it. What I mean is history will repeat itself time and again, but the overcome will remain the same. It's just one of those things that the evil in humanity brings. Wanting to make you believe that you'll be the one to change the thing that torments us all, and that is to be perfect in everything, and that is an impossible thing. So don't get enchanted with impossible truths. Just stick to the manual, and you will make it through. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And Truth actually took 5 prompts, too. 3 o'clock is always too late or too early for anything you want to do. Evil is the product of humans to make abstract that which is concrete. If you are lonely when you're alone, you're in bad company. And life begins, like all dreamers, and it took disenchantment for truth. And actually, you did a pretty good job of weaving everything in there. I like the book opening note. Who needs enemies when I got me? Or is that kind of hit a sour note of reality in the moment right up front. Integrity is about accountability. Two words that are as obsolete as Hostess Twinkies. I like that note because they once offered up that note. 1,000 years from now, if they find Hostess Twinkies, they'll still be an edible product. although you might not want to go there, which is funny. But it is, there's truth right there. Two words that are so obsolete. The idea of integrity is about accountability. Neither one are taken for what they are supposed to mean these days. And then she delves right back into that chastisement of self. The problem is, one, that can never be remedied because everywhere I go, I'm right there with me. So she already pointed out the problem. Yeah, me, stuck in a time warp where it always seems to be 3 o'clock, too late for saying sorry, but just in time for a pity party. I like that little note of humor right there, especially since she's digging a note at herself, so to speak, or, in essence, a note at ourselves. She's taken the thought of being ironic and satirical to the point where she's making not just fun of herself, but the fact that most everybody walks in these shoes at some time, and sometimes off times. So I like the note in this. It's deliberate, it's not fanciful, and it's honest. Nicely done, Truth. All right, Pam, what about you?
Yeah, I liked this one, and I too got a kick out of the reference to the Hostess Twinkie, which, by the way, fun fact, was invented in 1930 by a Canadian baker. So thank you, Canadians, for giving us ketchup chips, which are horrible, and maple syrup and Twinkies. So there you go. And hockey. So, but this is a great write. And I like how she writes it from the point of view of offering up advice, words of wisdom to her sons and her daughter, you know, about, you know, not having those pity parties, about, you know, having that common sense and not repeating the same mistakes over and over again. And yet, you know, and yet understanding that, you know, as a human, you will make mistakes. And I do like how at the end she says, don't get enchanted with impossible truths. You know, it's good to have dreams and it's good to have goals, but keep things within perspective. You know, make those goals, you know, work on the short first, you know, rather than, you know, trying to jump way farther than you should in one leap. So wonderful, heartfelt words of wisdom and very well done.
Nice. All right. Where shall we delve next?
All right. Rex, I'm going to have you read this next one that I'm putting up, and I'm going to ask you to comment on it first. I do want to comment, but I have to step away, and I'll be back. But it is Kiss and Tell by Liquid Mind Forever. And go ahead and give that a read, and then go ahead and comment.
Kiss and Tell by Liquid Mind Forever. And she took prompt 3, words are loaded pistols. And the tongue is the machine gun which spits them out, pink, luscious, pointed with discrimination. No doubt they come out, sometimes roundabout, sometimes straight. Heavy baggage adds up when you calculate the cost of freight. We kill and mutilate more prisoners of war than Dachau gas to the Holocaust of Hitler. What we allow and disavow somehow tries to justify and buy. You ask for the truth? Some fun these wet leathery pistols, amputees of tongue with guns. And everyone gets away with murder, be it slander, libel, or gossip, tongue and groove, rip and bear, beware, word snare, they're a trip. Prefaced or tagged at the end by one called your best, to the end, friend, murder or slaughter is still the same, no matter who or how they defend. Just stop this gang bang at the Steak and Shake on Friday nights. French fries and hard fried steak will require crossfires bites. Stop this nonsense and rhetoric of saying, I'm sorry, sorry. I prefer the movie theater who charges for goring and more glory. What is the ammunition behind the words and letters so neatly estranged? Take aim at the garage. We're all deranged, even in foreign exchange. Arrange your thoughts in perfect condemnation. Damnation's range. Lay down with these friendly dogs and you get up with their mange. Be prepared for their wallops. They come in dozens like scallops. Stinky and fishy, you can smell them like pussies and trollops. Remember, I love you and tell you what's true so you know who loves you through. I dismember you and flush you down the loo. End poem. I like the bite and the finish. the idea of, oh, you're nothing but a shite that I evacuate from my bowels and flush your sorry ass down the loo with all the other trash that I don't need anymore. Well, I like that. That's a great ending with the idea of that note. Well, of course, the sort of the title itself, Kiss and Tell. So there's some, again, that prerequisite charm of offering up that which is shared
between two, and it's meant to hurt. But on this sort, with the kiss and tell angle, it's being spread to the point where it comes back from other sources, and that never offers up a note to goodness. But considering, hey, those thoughts aren't supposed to be shared elsewhere. You want to use them where it's directed, because at this point, you're using this for the thought of nothing but humiliation, because you want it to get back. You know it'll get back, and you know it'll do a lot more damage. Whew. And that thought, yeah, just stop this gangbang of the Steak and Shake on Friday nights, French fries and hard fried steak require crosswires bites. Stop this nonsense and rhetoric saying, I'm sorry, sorry. I prefer the movie theater who charged the gory and more gory. Ooh, a heavy bite there. Hey, you made the bed. You made your bed. Now you get to sleep in it. And what is the ammunition behind the words and letters so neatly estranged? Take aim at the grain, the garage. We're all deranged, even the foreign exchange. Arrange your thoughts in perfect condemnation. Their nation's range. Lay down with these friendly dogs, and you get up with their mange. Double dipping. This not only hits on the idea of the sort of kiss and tell between a pair, it also walks in that range of country to country, the games the upper echelon plays, and that which comes out on the back end is always never a good thing, because when you're trading out for the deliverance, because you want somebody to pay on that angle, the only ones who get to pay really are those on the bottom end, because the top of the heap never pays for it, unfortunately. Liquid. Pam, you back?
I am, yes. And I have no doubt that you did a wonderful read of that, as you always do. I had read this right earlier, and I'm very impressed with it, you know, as I always am with Deborah's writing. Brilliant imagery, metaphors, powerful, hard-hitting lines. What I like about this write is it really takes you on a roller coaster of emotions. Well, first of all, I have to say that to me, in part, what this poem speaks on is the nonsense of words not backed by action. Like, you know, what good is it to speak up, to apologize, you know, to, you know, like when she brings up the history and the history of the Holocaust, and how people want to speak on how that didn't happen, it didn't exist. And how the words hurt, which reminds me, I actually watched the movie about that, which was based on the true story of a guy who was claiming that the Holocaust didn't happen. So this college professor, I believe she was, took him, and this happened back in 94, and you might remember, but it went to court. And I forget what the movie's called, but it stars Rachel Weisz. And it's a really good movie and a really interesting story. It kind of makes me think of Liquid Mind Forever's poem and the ugliness of history and the rhetoric of where she says, stop this nonsense, and rhetoric of saying, I'm sorry, sorry. I prefer the movie theater who charges for gory and more gory. What is the ammunition behind the words and letters so neatly arranged? Take aim at the grange, we're all deranged, even in foreign exchange. I like how we're all deranged, even in foreign exchange. Speaks to me on the idea of perhaps getting involved with more than we should. I don't know if that's what you meant by it, but it kind of brings that thought to my mind. This has great wordplay, wonderful inner and end rhyme, and I really enjoyed reading this, and I have to go back. I've kind of been jumping around. I said this brings in a roller coaster of emotion, because, you know, first it hits me really hard with the message of the history of the concentration camps and the way people manipulate with words. But then those end lines, I have to say, and I don't know if she meant it to, but it cracks me up. I just absolutely got a kick out of the end where she says, stinky and fishy, you can smell them like pussies and trollops. Remember, I love you and tell you what's true so you know who loves you, though I dismember you and flush you down the loo. And it's dark and it's twisted. But it's just got this wonderfully humorous, deranged look at how people will treat other people like pieces of shit and then tell them, you know, well, of course I love you. Can't you tell? I treat you like shit. And, you know, so just an absolute clever write and very well done.
What we got next?
All right.
Where are we going next?
Up next. Are you talking to me, yourself, or your dog?
I was talking to myself. I wanted to check. I had two reserves. I wanted to check to see if they had finished them, but they hadn't.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, up next we have Imagination at 3 a.m. by Jesna Sajan. The melatonin hormone has gone to sleep to keep me awake, startled with a beep. Imagination was high when I started to fly. I went to my folks to say a random bye, but they were all gone to an outer space. I was catapulted. A rock hit my face. Swollen was my cheek from the left to the right. I saw myself in the mirror to have a big fright. I could not put myself to get back to sleep. Minutes kept ticking. I started to weep. It was one mania that kept me awake. The fear seeming real, food in the oven bake. I was fine and heavy towards twilight. Now 3 hours later, the stroke of midnight. Who came to wake me, the wolf or the dog? My throat parched. Did I swallow a frog? Random phantoms throttled my curvy brain. The thunder struck three. It began to rain. End poem.
Gregory Pam and Jasna took two quotes. 3 o'clock is almost too late or too early for anything you want to do, and if you are lonely when you're alone, you are in bad company. Played this one out pretty good. The eyes are rolling down into a good portion where she hits that. I was fine and heavy towards twilight. Now, 3 hours later, the stroke of midnight. Who comes to wake me, the wolf or the dog? My throat parched. Did I swallow a frog? The wolf or the dog? Kind of hits on that note of which do you feed is the one that comes forth. I like that. Random phantoms throttled my curvy brain. A thunder struck three. It began to rain. The idea of lost in her own thoughts that keep roiling past the note of midnight, and she can't sleep. Yet now the thought of rain kind of hits at the idea of maybe it's a touch of tears that fly because her mind is just going nonstop and she can't get to sleep. She so clearly wants and needs in the moment because it's in that sort of imagination was high when it started to fly. I went to my folks to say a random bye. And then the random thoughts that pop up, kind of that the mind just running amok in the moment. So nicely done, Jasna. Thank you. Now, what about you, Pam?
I like this. I find this one very relatable because part of the kind of narcolepsy that I have is that you go into REM sleep very quickly and you go into dreams really quickly. And I'm also one of those people that just will, when I am starting to fall asleep, have really weird thoughts that just bounce from one thought to another like this. And so I really relate to this and how oftentimes it's difficult for me to tell where my waking thoughts end and my dreaming thoughts begin. But the way she wrote this in kind of this like short, like bouncy rhyme that really works with the chaoticness, the chaotic flow and message of the poem itself. I like that she brings up melatonin. A lot of people have good results in melatonin. I remember my son, Jaron, we had to switch him to a medication because he just kept building up this immunity to melatonin, and it just kept not working. But I like how this, you know, with the imagery that she brings up, it's the whole idea of not only struggling to find sleep, but as you're struggling to find sleep, dealing with the fears and the anxieties that bombard the mind. So definitely a great write on the chosen prompts and very well done.
Nice. All right. Where do we go next?
All right. Up next, I'm going to put up 2,000 Years From Now by Lockdown Lark. And this one's not really on topic, but because I was looking for poems earlier and Lockdown Larks was nice enough to answer the call for needed poems for tonight, I wanted to make sure his poem got read. And so with that being said, go ahead, please, Rex, and give this a read.
Let's see. To 1,000 years from now. 800 million years ago, the earth was frozen whole. There was nothing to know, no life with any soul. 250 million years ago, this world was engulfed in flame. 90% life lost in the glow, no god or government to blame. 10 million years ago, apes descend from trees. Hominids start to grow, using stone tools for life's ease. 2 million years ago, the world feels the habilis migration, hominids in full flow, coveting land now a fixation. 1 million years ago, erectus take control of fire, cooking food is now on show, fueling their heart's desire. A few hundred thousand years ago, sapiens find a source of power, words as well as spears they throw, earth sees the coming of its hour. Just 7,000 years ago, stone is yesterday's news, metalworking changes status quo, lighting a technology fuse. Some 5,000 years ago, sapien ego is now flying high. There is heaven above and hell below, wondering a cognitive shift to why. Just 200 years ago, there were some 1 billion using resources they cannot borrow. No worries, just carry on. Where do they go now? Unknowing they became 8 billion. As the earth feels this blow, collective perspective they shun. To you, 1,000 years from now, please look back on us with favor. We did our best, thought we knew how. Hope we left you something to say them. And poem. A little bite of irony and sardonic flavor in that. What do you think?
There is, absolutely. I have to agree. In fact, I was going to say that after you were done reading, was that while it was not inspired by one of your provided prompts, I did feel like it fit really nicely with the show because it did have that bite of sardonic humor to it. That and how you know, the sardonic is often ridden with the idea of making a social and political commentary. And I think that Lockdown Larks does that really well. To me, there was clever and intriguing lines on a history throughout the ages and how it seems like we're almost going backwards in how we are developing and how we are taking care of the planet and, you know, how things are happening. And I like how this speaks to me on how the hope of leaving a good impression for future generations and yet at the same time looking at how things have been progressing and wondering, you know, is anything going to come of that hope? And I like that he asks the question after giving all the numbers and slowly bringing us like closer and closer, it seems, to the idea of end times. He asks the question, where do they now go unknowing they become 8 million as their earth fills this blow collective perspective they shun? Wonderful, thought-provoking lines, and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. That note, collective perspective, they shun, that's the idea. That goes with the rulers. They offer up their own singularity to what is, yet they don't want anybody beneath them walking on the same path except their own. So you don't have a collective that walks within a perspective that is that can be argued back and forth. If you've got those, they're pitted against one another. And that I thought to the last stanza, to you 1,000 years from now, please look back on us with favor. We did our best, thought we knew how. Hope we left you something to savor. Now, there's a quixotic note to that. What might be left 1,000 years from now if all of a sudden a good portion of the planet got wiped out right now? Not a whole lot, because it only takes 50, 75 years for the growth to reclaim cities. And in that time, we haven't built anything that will stand the test of time for 1,000 years, because concrete eventually crumbles, steel rusts, glass cracks and breaks. So what might be left? You might find a few places that are actually stand the test of time. But unlike what you can do now from 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, even 12,000 years ago, that is out there, is not the same. They use that which is natural to the region, stone that lasts, stone that doesn't go away, doesn't disappear, even with the sort of wind damage, erosion, and rain damage, it still stands. So the collective idea is what might be left. Might they find a cell phone buried in the sand somewhere and looking at it and wondering, what the hell is this? Because, well, you can't turn it on after 1,000 years. And even at that, will there even be any electrical grid to operate it? So, again, that note to all that is. So, what do they think? They might not have to think of anything except what was once here, what might have been here, and who and what they were. Our products, books and all that, if it's online, we don't have electricity, that's irrelevant. Conflagration destroys everything that's paper. So what might they find? Who knows? Maybe nothing. Nicely done, Lux. Thank you very much. All right.
Hi. And up next we have Paving the Road to Guy Garanwe. And it goes like this. Roads to freedom we all seek, what they are and what are they, grasped by fingers of reality, seeking out a straight pathway in the curve of being you, holding tight to doing right by paving the roads to hell, interpreting of offenses never meant, a finger pointed with three pointing back at you, choices left and choices right, vanished footprints left behind. Being guilty is a comedy that entertains 12 men, good and true. In the freedom of a cul-de-sac, holding hands with failure's friend, what you've done and what's been done, a chorus for the final hill. But is it up or is it down? End poem.
Great, Pam. Thank you very much. Well, that reminds me of a couple of Twilight Zone episodes. What happens to a town when panic sets in? Whether it's the idea of they think the world is coming to an end because of the nuclear holocaust, and one neighbor has built himself a fallout shelter for his family, and he stocked it, and then you've got all the neighbors who did nothing are suddenly at his door pounding on it, trying to get in. They finally get in, and all hell breaks loose, and they find out nothing has happened yet. They've deteriorated into a mess. And then there was another one about a supposed landing from aliens. The whole town goes dark, and then they turn into a mob looking for somebody to blame it on as the alien in their neighborhood, and they take it out on people. And it, again, that goes to the note of devolving humanity in the moment because of fear. And you've got the idea of finger pointed with three pointed back at you. Choices left and choices right, vanished footprints left behind. Being guilty is a comedy that entertains 12 men, good and true. Again, that note, and be careful of how you present yourself and what you do in the moment, because, hey, everybody pays for it eventually. Nicely done, Dorian Wayne. Thank you. What about you, Pam?
I really like this one. As always, Garanwi has an intelligent write with strong imagery and metaphors, thought-provoking lines. I like how this, you know what, I like your observations, first of all, I have to say, on it, because it does have a Twilight Zone episode type feel to it, and it does speak on mob mentality. I like how it speaks on the twisted roads of freedom often being, paved with guilt and blame and a finger pointed with three pointed back at you. We always want to blame other people for our problems when really we need to be taking a look inward. I do like the jury reference of the 12. Being guilty is a comedy that entertains 12 men, good and true. And I feel like there is a sardonic bite to that and the whole idea that no man is purely good and true. And so being the, and it also makes me think of the movie 12 Angry Men, which, you know, is a really awesome movie. I like how it speaks on the idea of mob mentality and being put on in front of a jury of our peers to be judged. And the ending where it says, a course to the final hill, but is it up or is it down? I like how that referenced the idea of where are you going at the end of life. But I think also is the whole idea of do you see the glass as half empty or half full? So wonderful lines and very well done.
All right, where do we go next?
All right, up next, and by the way, these are poems that we got from another contest, which was ran by Neutron Bomb and Captain B2 2 years ago, and so we're very appreciative of these rights to have tonight. And up next we have Life Begins on the Other Side of Despair by John Nakapalo. And go ahead, please, Rex, and give that a read.
Oh, Life Begins on the Other Side of Despair by John Nakapalo. Because you have to vault over it to get there, and once you land and you find your legs did not break, the steps that seemed so hard now fall soft on hard path ahead, still long and filled with potholes. But now you have firmness and stride, because that is the only way to break what steps on you. And boom. All right, Pam, what do you think?
Great read there, Rex. And you got the shorty this time. But as always, this is a brilliant brevity by John Nakapalo, who always, to me, does a very clever and intelligent job of fitting his titles into being part of the poem itself. I thought this had an amazing imagery and extended metaphor. I like how it speaks on getting over those hurdles of life, and one of those hurdles being despair, and despair being a mindset, and how, you know, I really like this all the way through because it's difficult to separate one part from the other, but I particularly like these two couplets. And you find your legs did not break the steps that seemed so hard. Now fall soft and hard on hard path ahead, still long and filled with potholes. So, yeah, you made it over this huge hurdle, but now you've got this long road ahead with all these potholes that you have to watch out for. You know, so there's always going to be challenges to trip you up. Wonderful, right, and very well done.
Absolutely. That idea of the challenges, because you have to vault over, it was sort of a pole vaulting in the moment, something, the high bar you have to reach. But then again, there are always trials, tribulations that roll that path as you stride forward. That kind of hits on the idea of maybe there's something in anxiety here, because it hits that last line, offers up a distinct note to something a little deeper. But now you have firmness and stride, because that is the only way to break what's stepped on you. So the integral thought, the back end of this, is that high bar, the broken feeling, and the idea of being weak-limbed, so to speak, is because somewhere along the line, you were crushed, that idea of something larger, stepping on an ant, so to speak. You got that note to break what stepped on you. There is a note to a kind of a cyclical arrangement where you keep going back to that moment because you can't get past it. And that note to vault is that high bar that you have to keep reaching for, but don't seem to until you finally manage to get over that bar, and then you get past that note in the last line of what stepped on you. You have to get past that tidbit of mentality that keeps shoving itself into your mind when it doesn't need to be. So thank you, John. All right, what's next?
All right, up next we have In the Basement by R. Byron, and it goes like this. Purple brass in the basement, 40 and 3 years of memory. Now a cold underground, slimy walls and cold floors. A hero from a past erased as those do not remember. Home to seconds of seclusion, days slow like shattered suns. And moons without a dipper, lines of a face, bear the tale. Jungles of jigsaw puzzles, ladders upon hills of Gomorrah. Empty buckets of sea sand like pirates without a treasure, a yesterday for today, memories stained like gloss, bought a fishing line in Cork, past days like Mickey Rourke, a line of shade inching till covers a life buried, gray hair and beer gut wobbles up the hill, a smile like Mona Lisa demure on the chair, sacrifices sold but not purchased, 40 and 3 days, a memory, while fishing he passed, no goodbyes from even a fish, and poem.
Great read, Pam. It kind of finishes out on the same note. He starts off with a purple brass in the basement, 40 and 3 years of memory. Now a cold underground, slimy walls and cold floors. Age kind of walks in that note right there. The hero from the past erased as those do not remember. The forgotten note to someone who was once a hero, but now passes it,
quietly into the back end of life. Seclusion. Moons without a dip, a line to face, bear the tail. Jungles of jigsaw puzzles, lands upon hills of Gamora. The idea of Gamora kind of hits on that notion of trudging through the darker vein of existence. Maybe that's where the thought of a war comes in as part of this. Empty buckets of sea sand, like pirates without treasure. Well, that's kind of maybe a note to Guadalcanal in the Philippines, all those islands during World War II. And the back end of this is the fishing line of Cork, trying to find some peace at the end of life, so to speak. And he finishes out with the thought of 40 and 3 days of memory. So you go from the 43 years up here on the top end to 43 days on the back end. While fishing, he passed, no goodbyes from even a fish. So this was the hit on that idea of being born alone and going on the back end, dying alone, because there's never anybody really there in the moment except yourself. And that's a sad note, but also maybe the idea of passing in this fashion, doing something that he passed date like Mickey Rourke. Now, that kind of has me thinking of, what was that movie, Barfly, because he does hit the gray hair, bare gut, walls up to here. So the idea of kind of wasting away in the moment. What about you?
Yeah, I really like this. Nicely written couplet. To me, it did have amazing imagery and hard-hitting lines and did speak on our changing times and the memories of someone who served in a war, was considered a hero, but was forgotten. I did get a kick out of those lines. Brought a fishing line in Cork, past days like Mickey Rourke, and how that brings to mind somebody who's trying to drown their sorrows in alcohol and drugs. And I like the juxtaposition of gray hair and beer gut wobbles up the hill, a smile like Mona Lisa demure on the chair. That whole idea of someone whose whole life has gone to hell in a handbasket, and yet in that moment, so close to their death, they have that demure Mona Lisa smile, and you know, as if they just really are appreciating that in the moment, they have, you know, one, you know, like, I don't know, like it's just that they found that sense of peace within that moment. All right, and very well done. And I just have one more write from that contest that I want to make sure that we get in, and that is Why We Send the Poor by Babbler. And go ahead, please, Rex, and give that a read.
Why We Send the Poor by Babbler. War is wet socks in a steel-toe boot, rocking the foot and chewing the leather, wearing thin at the heel and toe, limp in toes and side, smelling foul, leaving the wearer raw but unblistered, scarred yet functional. It is no Sunday golf in crisp whites. And this is why we send the poor. Victuals of war are dry and off-tasting, palatable to a thunderous belly, percolated coffee littered with grounds, off-puttingly reminiscent of the color of old blood regurgitated or defecated. Yet, it is gulped down by aching throats, grateful for bitter drugs. It is no filet mignon seared to perfection. And this is why we send the poor. Uniforms of war air are utilitarian, stitched thick canvas material and sturdy pockets that hold instruments of death. Sweat rolls down in rivers under hot foreign suns as the marching pods on, camouflage drinks from prune bodies beneath. It is no haute couture from the spring collection, and this is why we send the poor. Iron crosses of war press against sockets to blow holes to fellow man, sending entrails into the eyes of their kin. Blue fingers flexed against the triggers, praying to the multitudes of gods, this is not murder, confident that some distant tomorrow will be different and full. It is not halo on your Italian leather sofa, and this is why we send the poor. War scrapes against the bottom of wills, collecting the last bit of purpose, ekes out that final smoldering coal, next heavy footfall, next pulse, next breath, searing it against the cheek of death, stretching out the heat on blind faith, that victory is just ahead, while a fallen sky crushes the spine. It is no cushy position given by daddy, and this is why we send the poor. The rich lack intestinal strength to answer the roar of hell, to scream profanity at the monsters of a broken mind, butter soft palms, bleed at the thought, trigger untouched. Shallow vats of fortitude scrape away easily, like congested fat to clog the arterioles of victory, their blubbery bodies drown in simpering salt water because money didn't solve the problem. And this is why we should send the rich and poor.
Great read there, Rex. A brilliant write by Babbler, who got a well-deserved silver in that contest. Powerful imagery and metaphors, hard-hitting and biting lines on how wars are started by the rich and fought by the poor. I also like how this speaks on the way society sacrifices the poor to appease the rich, and the sardonic bite at the end with their blubbery bodies drowned in simpering salt water because money didn't solve the problem. And this is why we should send the rich. You know, wonderful lines and very well done.
Yeah, she kind of hits the last line in each stanza, or at least until the bottom, and offers up a note to where she's going. It is no Sunday golf and crisp whites. It is no filet mignon to see its perfection. It is no haute couture from the spring collection. It is not halo on your leather sofa. It is not cushy position given by daddy. And then she drops that final stanza, which ends with, this is why we should send the rich. There's always an easy out for those with money. That's been just like those who supposedly serve in the upper echelons of power, who make sure their kids are way out of the way of harm. And when it comes to this, and you know what? Maybe the idea is, hey, if not the rich, at least those idle loafers who think, hey, let's just send a bunch. Well, you know what? Send the politicians in. Let's see how they fare. And send the politicians from all of the countries in. We might end up with a better flow of thought that speaks to morality on the back end of things. So, I say done, Barbara. All right. That's the back end of everything. Great show, Pam. Thank you very much, Randy. Thank you for coming in. And, well, nobody's on board, so it's just us.
Great, great show tonight, Rex. Have a good night.
All right. Good night, all. We'll see you next Tuesday.